Dead right, if the head right, Biggie there, and I. Papa been smooth since days of under rules. Never lose, never choose to. Bruise, cruise, who? Do something to us. Talk, go through us. Girls want to us, wanna do us. Screw us, who us? Yeah, Papa and Pop. Close like Starsky and Hutch, stick to clutch. Yeah, I squeeze three at your cherry M3. Bang every MC easily. Recently, frontin' ain't saying nothing, so I just speak my peace. Keep my peace. Cubans with the Jesus peace. With my peace. Packing, asking who want it. You got it, flaunt it. That Brooklyn bull, we on it.
Biggie, 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 can't you see? Sometimes your words just hypnotize me. And I just love your flashy ways.
Hey Canada, you're listening to Northern Exposure, and this is your host, Acacia Mason.
Welcome, eCanada. It is Canada Day, and you are listening and tuned in live to 186.7 Confederation Station. What an awesome opportunity to have a chance to broadcast live to you right from my podcasting studio. It is great to have you along. The weather outside is beautiful. It is sunny and warm where I am. Hopefully it's plenty sunny and warm where you are today too. And if you're going out this evening to check out the fireworks, it looks like it will be all clear. No signs of rain, only a few clouds in the sky. It should be a beautiful opportunity to get out with your family, your friends, or perhaps your loved ones and enjoy a beautiful Canada Day celebration. Welcome back to another episode of Northern Exposure. I am your host, Acacia Mason, and I apologize. Last week we were not on the air. I took vacation time, and that meant a little bit of vacation from my podcasting efforts as well. However, I am back large and in charge once again, guiding you through another episode of Northern Exposure. Now, we normally have a format that we follow for the show. However, given that this is the last episode that we are going to run before the launch of V2, I thought it only appropriate that maybe, just maybe, we would abandon our normal program for just one show and do a spotlight on V2 as we wave goodbye to V1 and walk hand in hand as a unified team into V2 and all of its glorious splendor. First on the list of things that I think we're going to dive right into is our first V2 president. How exciting is that? An opportunity for somebody to be the first to lead our exalted nation in to V2. Lots of great candidates on the roll. There's a lot of great platform information out there. Whoever gets elected certainly is going to have their hands full as they begin the process of trying to guide this country through the first infancy stages of V2. I do not envy the individual who will hold that chair. It will certainly be one of the most challenging, most taxing, most exciting, and hopefully most rewarding terms for any president to date. So on that note, some of the front runners, we have Christopher True out of the UN. Of course, we have Rollo Tomasi out of the CEP. My own presidential hopeful, Adashko, I've obviously had the opportunity now to be asked to serve as his vice president. And, of course, let us not forget the incumbent, Dade Pendwin, who has done a phenomenal job in his current term, holding down the fort and dealing with a number of very interesting challenges. So if nothing else, Dade has definitely proven that when the heat is on, he is as cold as ice. So whoever our first V2 president is, and we will soon find out in the next couple of days as we get closer and closer to the big button-pushing day where we will cast our ballots and throw our support behind somebody, that individual will certainly have their work cut out for them. But it's not just the first V2 president that's going to be very, very interesting. Let us not forget that for me anyway, V2 will mark the arrival of what I believe will be a new breed of e-Republic player. Now, what does that mean exactly, a new breed of player? For those people who hopefully have been out there and trying out the beta version of e-Republic Rising, I know they call it e-Republic Rising. I'm going to call it V2 because if you ask me, there's been nothing really rising out of e-Republic as of late. In fact, it seems like a lot of things are falling or failing. But anyway, the arrival of a new breed of player. Here's the thing. V2, for those people who've had the fun and excitement of testing out the new format, one of the first things I think you're going to conclude right off the bat, that this is definitely a more strategic version of eRepublic. So I think the new breed of players that come into this, and those of us old fogies who are coming from V1, and the great old fogies who are coming from the beta days, it will require a much more strategic mind in terms of how you map out your game plan. It will be very difficult to be a two-clicker in V2 because you're going to actually have to invest some time in what you're doing and how you're going to do it and so on and so forth. So in my mind, time management and strategic thinking will be the two biggest keys to success. Time management, and that you're going to have to effectively take that 24 hours that you're granted and carefully and strategically divide it up so that you get the most bang for your buck. And you're going to have to think strategically about what you want to do, because gone will be the days of being a jack of all trades and a master of many of them. Because in V2, if you wish to be a jack of all trades, you will be a master of none of them. You're really going to have to think carefully about what you want to do and make those decisions with an eye towards some strategy. And when I talk about the fact that it will be a jack of all trades and a master of none of them, I think it brings to mind the fact that the class system will be further defined. I think the lines will be even deeper drawn into the sand between the rich and the poor, the smart and the not so smart, and the strategic and the definitely not strategic. So we're going to see a situation where the divide between the haves and the have-nots will become even larger. And it's not just because of the gold and the boosters. That will certainly play a role in that division. However, being able to think carefully and make smart decisions with the 24 hours that you're granted will certainly be the gold standard in terms of that divide that will take place between the really good players and the really great or outstanding excellent players. So, again, keeping in mind that time management and strategic thinking will be the key to success, and the new breed of player that comes in that was never exposed to beta, never exposed to V1, those who will only ever know V2, I think in some respects might have a leg up because they're not going to be stuck dealing with the old issue of change, and change is slow and it's painful and sometimes it's difficult to adapt. But when the only thing you've ever known is the current system, those people tend to be more nimble in their ability to adapt. So again, Darwin might have had it right, and that it will be an evolution here, and only the strong will survive. And those individuals who can adapt the quickest and drop the whining and the moaning about, oh, V1 this, V1 that, well, guess what, folks? V1 is gone. It is time to wrap your head around the fact that we have V2, and the faster we stop complaining and the quicker we start thinking about how to adapt, the faster we're going to be able to survive. V2 doesn't just herald in a new breed of player, though. It also heralds in a new form of economics. And although Addy Lawrence and I have been butting heads as of late, and we're going to continue to do that, I think, for a little while, I do think, though, that from an economics perspective, guys like Addy Lawrence have got to be really excited about what's coming down the pipe, because the evolution of the economic module is very, very interesting. And it's not just the evolution of it, but there are a few particular things that really need to be focused on. And let's get this right on the table right away. Titanium. E-Canada is blessed to have two titanium regions, and we all know what titanium is going to be used for in V2. We don't need to beat that horse any further. However, it will be very, very interesting to see what the opening costs of titanium will look like in the early or initial days of V2. Will it be absolutely astronomical, or, as some people have predicted, as company owners have stockpiled diamonds in preparation for those diamonds to be converted to titanium, will we see an immediate market saturation that will drive prices perhaps to a more reasonable level until that overstock depletes, and then we'll see a slow and steady spike in titanium prices? No matter how you slice it, if you are a diamond company owner right now, you know, and you have stock that's being held it will be very interesting to see whether or not those owners immediately put the full Monty on the table, or if they're going to kind of portion it out and kind of feel out where the market's going. So be very, very interesting when we look at the titanium piece. And again, in my own mind, I'm thinking to myself, if I had, let's say, 4,000 diamonds stockpiled in a, you know, a Q3 diamond company, you know, my question would be, you know, are you the kind of person that puts that whole 4,000 on the market almost right away, or do you portion that out and put it out piecemeal until we get a better handle on what the prices are going to look like, perhaps even fueling the supply versus demand cycle? You know, we've all seen that happen with real life gasoline prices. Are we going to see it happen with titanium? Only time will tell, but it will certainly be very exciting to be a diamond company owner moving into V2. Regional economies versus global economies. And this is going to be very, very interesting. Because, again, with certain items being more important than others, and certain regions being more coveted than others, will we see a rise of regionalism or protectionism over high quality regions? Or are we going to see the final full-blown development and evolution of a true global economy? Be very, very interesting again to see where that goes. I don't really have an opinion on the matter. I don't profess myself to be an economist. However, if you are somebody who really enjoys the economics of e-Republic, these are definitely exciting times for you as we look towards whether or not we're going to see that protectionist type of approach to certain regions, or if we're going to see a more globalized economy, or will we see splintered type operations where, you know, things like the Broliance, et cetera, who will safeguard their particular assets and use a more protectionist approach. Be very, very interesting to see what happens there. Let's talk about jobs that will be in demand too, because if you're an e-Canadian, you have to ask yourself, where am I going to get, where's the cheese? Show me the money, Jerry Maguire. I think, and it's interesting because I've had some great conversations with JB DeVinis, and as much as, as much as JB tends to sometimes be a bit of a controversial figure, if you haven't talked to him yet around some of the migration thoughts, you're missing out, because he and I shared some great conversations on IRC around migration and skill sets and where we see the popular choices to be. And JB raised a couple of good points that were kind of in the back of my mind, but I wasn't really prepared to say in public. Again, if you're an e-Canadian, certainly Harvester has got to be something that will be top of mind for you. With two diamond regions and what we anticipate to be an absolutely ludicrous demand for titanium, if you are a Harvester, it only stands to reason that you will see some incredible wages on the job market as titanium companies look for people to pull in that titanium to get it to market. I think there'll be some great wages available there. However, again, the same problem exists for e-Canadians. If everybody migrates to Harvester, well, what does that do for the other occupations? And certainly, if there is a shortage of technicians, project managers, what have you, whatever the case may be, marketing managers, it will be very, very interesting to see what happens with those wages, because, again, supply versus demand. If there's a demand for these individuals and not enough of them to go around, you can bet your boots there's going to be an absolute spike in their wages. And it seems, based on census polling and such, that the Harvester route tends to be quite popular with people, and that's good and bad. And, again, I think the good is that there will certainly be opportunities to get employed. The bad is that it might create a situation where there are dramatic shortages in some other key fields. And although that'll be great in terms of spiking up salary, it will certainly be very, very interesting to see how company owners adjust to that. And when I say company owners, I'm thinking of people like Pets, for instance, who has an incredible empire of companies. I'd be very curious to see how preparations are made for that conglomerate in terms of being prepared and making sure that there's enough folks to fill certain jobs. Last but not least on the economics front, let's hit this one head on. It is certainly going to be more expensive for V2 than what we're seeing in V1. And again, gold for boosters, you don't need to buy boosters, but it will certainly make the difference in terms of that divide between the haves and the have-nots. Truly, the rich will get richer and the poor will either get poorer or they will just be able to get by. And again, I think we're going to see a lot of folks who will become niche opportunists who will, again, take whatever resources they have and dump them into filling the best possible opportunity for them. And again, those people who do hold a lot of gold will further open up the cavernous divide between those who have and those who do not have. So it will be very interesting to see whether or not this game becomes more of an elitist game, which will be oriented towards, again, those who are, you know, who are the richest of players, or if we're going to see the development and arrival of more charitable operations where we see some of our richest individuals helping out in a team effort. So, again, will it go elitist, or will we see a more more of a shift towards some sort of charity? I don't know, but we're certainly going to find out soon enough. Let's talk about the military for a few minutes. This is an area where I'm particularly excited. And I've had some very good conversations with Garen Thrax around the military piece. So some of these things I'm going to share with you, again, they're not my particular ideas or my thoughts. Some of them have just come from conversations with members of high command or with people who've been around the military end of this game for some time. Right off the bat, there are four options for military people: artillery, tanks, helicopters, and infantry. All great choices. However, I think we're missing what I'm going to call the invisible fifth option. And although you can only migrate to four possible categories, there truly is a fifth option that will exist inside of, and I don't care whether you're paramilitary, whether you're a private army, whether you are CAF, there's going to be a need for this fifth option, and that is going to be the strategist. That's going to be the individual who is incredibly good at seeing the bigger picture in terms of this hex-based fighting that's going to take place, and being able to strategically deploy, strategically manage troops and units. If you've ever played Risk or Axis and Allies, they are very much tile-based games. They're board games, and God help me for some of our younger players who don't know what board games are because everything happens on a computer. But if you've never played Risk or Axis and Allies, it reminds me very much of the hex-based fighting that takes place in the military end of V2. And one of the beautiful things about Risk and Axis and Allies is it forced you to think very carefully about the units that you used, where you put them, and even simple things like not just the battle that you were participating in, but the bigger picture. What impact will this have on the bigger picture? Does this open up an opportunity for us to advance our end game? We're going to have to be thinking 3, 4, 5 steps ahead with every decision that gets made. And I think that the most successful military groups, whether it's the CAF or the Praetors or the Paradoxian Guard or TCO, the most successful groups will be those who are able to find, develop, and grow military strategists. And I don't know what the plan is there, but certainly military intelligence, although some people would argue is an oxymoron, military intelligence and strategic thinking will be the crux of everything that will be happening in terms of the fighting portion of this game, and in terms of success anyway. There will be an even greater need as well for cooperation between the CAF and private armies. More teamwork will be needed, and I think IRC will become an absolutely critical component of deployment and cooperation, joint allied operations, whether strictly inside of eCanada or through the Bro Alliance, will become very important, because gone will be the days of simply showing up and, you know, at this magical spot that we call the wall, pressing a button 4 or 5 times and calling it a night. Now we're going to have to think, if we go to battle with our allies, IRC is going to, in my mind anyway, create a situation where we're going to need to have channels set up where people can communicate about what is going on the tile-based game to plan out the next moves. Who should go where? When should they go there? And as the battle's taking place, who needs to go where? We're going to need a few people pulling the strings, if you will. And whether that's a joint coalition of our best military minds, or whether it's done on an individual basis, depending obviously on the scale of the operation, I'm sure Eden High Command has already probably given this a great deal of thought, but certainly there's going to need to be some real-time involvement. It's not going to be a case of, here are the battle orders, off you go, have a nice fight. There's going to need to be some hand-holding and some real-time time management taking place. And again, whether that's done through IRC or whether or not it's done through opportunities like TeamSpeak or so on and so forth, either way, there's going to need to be even greater communication and organization. And that communication is going to be necessary in order for success to be had on the battlefield. And make no mistake, the country or the alliances that are quickest in terms of getting their communication together and getting their coordination together will be the ones that will rule the world. Or as the old adage says, the hand that rocks the cradle is the hand that rules the world. And there is great truth in that, and that the hand that can get things organized the fastest will be the one that will have the jump start. So, again, I'm not in CAF High Command. I don't profess to know anything. I'm not giving away anything. I'm just speaking out loud in terms of what I'm hearing, what I'm seeing in terms of my own personal testing of beta and so on and so forth. So that need for cooperation and, again, the fifth option of the strategist, you know, in a tile-based game. Also consider regional wars. With the changes to moving tickets and the fact that moving tickets will only be good for certain distances, I think we're going to see the rise of more regional wars and a lot less of the global warring that will take place. And global wars, ones that for things like Lion King, you know, or you know, Hello Kitty, and I think of some of the really big battles that take place, I think those types of wars will certainly draw the biggest numbers of individuals. However, for some of these smaller wars that take place, or these little resistance wars that crop up, again, I don't think you're going to see the same degree of involvement with these little resistance wars, et cetera, as we're seeing now. Because, again, one moving ticket will take you clear across the world. Well, that's simply not going to be the case anymore. And then you've got to think about the availability of these moving tickets as these companies get started. I mean, they're going to get snapped up, and how quickly, and will they be available, and will we be able to get moving tickets fast enough? And if we do get them, are we then going to have to prioritize who they go to, i.e., you know, our strongest units, or what's the best tactical choice in terms of unit to be deployed? You know, if you're dealing with a lot of mountainous terrain, clearly giving a moving ticket to a tank to go to a mountainous terrain region might not make sense, but perhaps you're going to give that to a helicopter. So, again, as that terrain starts to factor in as well. But, again, I think we're going to see more regional warring and a lot less global warring for a couple of reasons. And, again, moving tickets are certainly one of them. Also consider as well that terrain is going to have a factor. So, again, you can't just send your entire, almost your entire nation to go and conduct war, because there are going to be circumstances where terrain is going to simply make it impossible for certain units to be effective. So again, there's that strategic thinking coming into the equation again. And I think that's going to be quite critical. So again, more regional warring, less global warring, more strategic thinking, more cooperation will be needed. Certainly IRC and the ability to jump on communication right away will be critical in terms of the military opportunities that are out there. Also consider, as it stands right now, most people's only concern is their wellness. And that's going to change in V2, is you're going to need to be healthy and happy. You're going to need to be able to manage both effectively. And again, this is going to go back to my whole commentary around gold boosters and time management, the ability to make sure that your citizen stays happy, stays healthy. You're going to need to decide whether or not these are areas where you want to spend gold in order to take advantage of gold boosters. Those who cannot, obviously, again, talking about that cavernous divide that we're going to see, those who cannot use those gold boosters are going to have a harder time managing that happiness and that health level than those who do have access to those tremendous gold resources. So again, that cavernous divide between the haves and the have-nots, happy and healthy or unhappy and sick, are going to be massive factors. And keep in mind that from a military perspective, having soldiers and units that are happy and healthy and therefore strong and able to do the most damage will be critical. So the government, again, is going to have to address that issue, and certainly any military force is going to have to address that issue of making sure that its units are both happy and healthy so that they can get the most out of them from a damage perspective. Because again, when you're looking at more global, less global warring and more regionalization of war, you know, again, keeping the terrain as part of the factor, if you only have a handful of units to work with because of terrain or moving tickets or whatever the case may be, you need to make darn sure that those units are in tip-top shape. So, again, certain things that need to be considered there. And not only that, but there is consideration for the fact that you're going to have to be able to manage time effectively and manage your wellness effectively in order to get the most out of that. In order to be as effective as possible. So again, as it stands right now, Canadian Health Services, you make a donation if you're at a certain level, or maybe you don't need to make a donation if you're a newer player. But long story short, you send a request through, and bang, you're given all kinds of gifts. You know how that's going to work in V2. I guess we're yet to see. Last but not least, I'm going to close off again, just talking about skill migrations. What to choose, strategic choices. Again, we talked about this a little bit earlier, harvesters, technicians, blah, blah, blah. Again, looking at the census data, it seems that a lot of E-Canadians are leaning towards the harvester route, but think carefully about that as well, because again, as I think about technicians, these are going to be the individuals who are going to build weapons. And we all know that this game is at its most exciting when war is taking place. So, being a technician might not be a bad choice. But again, when you go to migrate your skills, and we've got 3 days left, the admins have indicated that 3 days to the launch of V2, the time is now to start looking at your skill migrations. Think carefully about where you want to migrate to in terms of your skill sets, and try not to go with the status quo. And right now the status quo feels like harvester, but try to avoid that if it's at all possible, because again, there will be demand for these. There's going to be a need for these other jobs. And if you're one of a few people that have those skill sets, well, now you're going to be highly in demand, because those skill sets are not going to be, as prominent as some of the others. So, there you have it, folks. That's my spin on V2. Again, I'm not a V2 specialist by any stretch of the imagination, but you know what? I've been sitting back and quietly gathering information and talking to people and looking at things and just kind of formulating in my own mind what I might expect with V2. And all I've tried to do here today is just share some insights, some thoughts. Obviously, again, what I'm sharing is not the be-all, end-all. And again, I don't profess to be the V2 specialist by any stretch of the imagination. But hopefully what I'm sharing with you today has helped you and given you some additional information. All I can say is this is the last episode of Northern Exposure for V1. In a few days, we will all find ourselves firmly into E-Republic Rising, a.k.a. V2. I hope everybody has a lot of success as they prepare for V2. And again, please leave your thoughts, your comments, your opinions in the remarks section of this article. I always like to hear what people have to say. And for those of you who are currently listening in live through 186.7 Confederation Station, thank you, Mr. McNamara, for that wonderful title. Thank you very much for tuning in. It was a pleasure to be broadcasting to you live through our humble E-Canadian radio station. I wish all of our country president candidates the best of luck in the coming elections. I wish you nothing but success in terms of the transition to V2 and your governance of this country as we move into V2. And again, I want to thank everybody who takes the time and out of their busy schedule to listen to me in my podcast. It is a pleasure to deliver this to you. I look forward to delivering the next episode of Northern Exposure as we enter and begin our days in V2. Once again, thank you, eCanada, for tuning in. It's a pleasure as always. Good day and good luck.
Come on. Ha, sicker than your average. Pop a twist, cabbage off instinct. It's don't think, kids think, pink gators. My Detroit players. Tim's for my hooligans in Brooklyn. That's right. Dead right, if the head right. Biggie there, and I. Papa been smooth since days of under rules. Never lose, never choose to. Bruise, cruise, who? Do something to us. Talk, go through us. Girls want to us, wanna do us. Screw us, who us? Yeah, Papa and Pump. Close like Starsky and Hutch. Stick to clutch. Yeah, I squeeze three at your cherry M3. Bang every MC easily.
Take
it. Recently, frontin' ain't saying nothing, so I just speak my peace. Keep my peace. Cubans with the Jesus peace. With my peace. Packing, asking who want it. You got it, flaunt it. That Brooklyn bull, we on it.
Biggie, 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 can't you see?